Cape Talk. Pippa's on Twitter.
You can tweet her at PJC Hudson.
So our travel segment today is very, very close to my heart because we are going back to my home province of the Eastern Cape. As I think you probably know from my mutterings over the years, I was born in East London. I lived there for 5 years. I also spent a very happy 5 years living in Port Elizabeth. My whole family is from that part of the world, almost all of them anyway. And it's a place that holds a very special place in my heart. As it does for my guest today, somebody who has been with us before, enthralling us with fascinating insights into everything from cricket history to the Spanish flu. And while you're scratching your head going, how does he end up in the travel segment? Dr. Dean Allen is an historian, author and speaker who's lectured all over the world on primarily sports history and sociology. Many of you will have loved his book, Empire, War and Cricket. It was a bestseller in South Africa. And I'm sure many of you are going to enjoy his latest series of books because we're on volume two with volume three soon to come of a series called Frontierland, which is an exploration of the Eastern Cape and its history and the history of the cultures that shaped it and the little towns that time has sometimes almost forgotten about, but Dean hopes tourists will rediscover. It's lovely to have you back with us in person, Dean. Thanks for coming in today.
No, thank you, Pippa. It's lovely to be back.
And back in Cape Town, because you've literally moved your whole family to the Eastern Cape while researching this book, haven't you?
We have. It's been an incredible sort of 6 months or so. I mean, yeah. I like to say I'm a bit like a salmon. Originally, of course, I came from the UK, as your listeners can hear from my accent. So I came the other way as a lot of South Africans were moving north, made South Africa my home. And then 6 months ago, we left the Western Cape to go to the Eastern Cape as a lot of people are moving the other way. Yeah. But it's been a fantastic, fantastic time. And as we'll talk now, I mean, the opportunities have just expanded. I mean, I've just fallen in love with South Africa again through my travels through the Eastern Cape.
What prompted you to go to the Eastern Cape? Why this topic? Why these books?
Well, you mentioned the Spanish flu. You remember, we've just come out of the COVID pandemic, of course. And during that time, I was doing talks about comparisons with the Spanish flu. I'm a historian, but I always want to use history to give us hope for today and the future. Mm. And just after we came out of that lockdown, we'd actually based ourselves in the wilderness in the Garden Route. And good friends of ours that run the hotel in Craddock, that wonderful Victoria Manor, Lisa Kerr, she said to me, Dean, would you just come to Craddock, dear old Craddock, where I say in my book, the potholes are as big as the welcome, which is true. would you do some wonderful sort of stories and put us on the map like you've done with Mikey Fontaine over the years? And I said, okay. So it was a two-week visit that turned into a two-month visit. And I realized, wow, there's some history in this province that I didn't even know about. So that took me traveling, basically. I mean, post lockdown, it was great to get back in the car again, wasn't it? We couldn't fly overseas, but we've got a country here that I think's got everything. And for me, the Eastern Cape had everything. It had that beautiful coastline, but it had that interior. It had the frontier wars. It had everything that ticked the boxes for me.
Yeah.
And it was a province, and it is a province that I think is misunderstood by many. For me, it is the heart of South Africa, as I talk about in my books. It's where a lot of the struggle icons came from.
Yeah.
But we go back to the original history. I mean, it was along that Great Fish River where the Europeans were moving east and the Xhosa Nation were going west, and they clashed in that area. And you feel there's a real soul to it.
Yeah. I mean, the stories of those frontier wars and of the early days, growing up in the Eastern Cape, we heard those stories. My own great-grandfather was an amateur historian who researched those. But it was always from one perspective. Dean, you've had the privilege of being able to go there in 2022 to have conversations with people from all across the cultural spectrum that wouldn't have been available to historians 100 and 150 years ago. How did that impact the kind of books that you've created?
Well, I try to be inclusive with my history. I certainly make no claim that this is a definitive history of anything. I see myself as a messenger. So how these books, Frontierland came about, Pippa, was through my social media, really. Yeah. I was traveling through and I was putting the odd post on Facebook, and the reaction I was getting from these small little stories from these little dorps, you know, the nostalgia that we were talking about before we came on air, I realized that the Eastern Cape really had a special place in the heart of many South Africans, if not all South Africans. Mm. So for me, it was when people started offering me information, and especially, as I said, our African brothers and sisters out there, certainly people from the Xhosa community who identify with that region, people from the Transkei. And I realized that I had a special mission here. And I think, given the fact that I call myself an outsider insider with this accent, I think I can navigate that space. And even recently, I know we've discussed it, I was invited by by the descendants of Chief Macoma. Now, Chief Macoma was one of the greatest warriors in that frontier war against the British in the 6th and the 8th frontier war. And there I found myself in the middle of the Transkei, and they wanted me to help tell his story. Wow. Now, for me, it's an incredible privilege. I'm not, as I said, I'm not an expert in their history, but they see me as a messenger for that. So what I try to do in my writing, and certainly in spreading the message, is to be representative. And I just feel the Eastern Cape, all people within the Eastern Cape, need a greater voice, because we tend to concentrate certainly in Johannesburg, in Cape Town. But dear old Port Elizabeth, Quebec, and East London, as you know, they're fantastic, fantastic communities. And I think the more people that experience it, the better.
What I love about these books, Nadine, is the way you take us off the beaten track, because PE, East London, I love them. They're wonderful places. They are places that at least some tourists get to. I opened these books and went, I didn't know that there was a town called Salem in the Eastern Cape, and I've never heard of this one. I know King William's Town. I know Hog's Back. I know a few, you know, little bits and pieces, but page after page, I went, oh, okay, I've never been to this town. They're right there within an hour or two's drive from the coastline, and yet most tourists will not venture into that sort of hinterland. Is part of your intention with this book to say to people, come dig deeper, go further in?
Certainly, and it started with my relationship with the people of Craddock. I mean, Craddock is, with all due respect to Hrafrenet, Craddock is probably the ugly sister of the two main towns in that part of the country. But I realised there was a real soul to the town, and the people that remained there really believed in its history. So when I started to venture out, the more derelict the town and the more almost forgotten the town, the more I wanted to find out the history, and there were stories. And each and every road trip that I took, I discovered these incredible stories. And often it was through people giving me information as I made that social media post that turned into the book. So what I've tried to do is include those stories within the book. So cheating in a way, really. I didn't sit in archives for long. I got out and I walked the streets and I talked to people. And no, the most amazing places I found, I mean, where a lot of the, you know, tumbleweed, you drive through this town in the middle of the day, you'd hardly see anyone. Yeah. Then you realise, hang on, a place like Steinsburg, for example. Paul Kruger, no less, was born just down the road from Steinsburg. Hofmeyr, the famous pink church. Jan Hofmeyr, politician, gave his name to it, and then you know, the railway used to come there, and it was this kind of story. And then I realized that there was a pattern here. People told me quite early, they say, Dean, this is how it works. The first thing that goes often in these communities is the school. Education, you know, I'm a teacher, is the most important thing. If the school goes downhill, often the community will then leave. The last thing to go is the church. But everywhere I went, there was a congregation and a pristine, often a Dutch Reformed church in the center of this community. And I thought, there's hope. And so I could see this pattern developing. But wherever I went, there was a strong community feel, even though they weren't the prettiest of places on the surface. When you dig back into its history, you can see that they were significant for various reasons.
Mm. I took my own kids on a road trip through the Eastern Cape a couple of years ago before lockdown. And some of it was, I'll be honest, it was downright depressing, Dean. It was not the place I remembered. As you said, the potholes had potholes. The approach to Hog's Back, for example, was really, it just looked windswept and litter strewn and strewn with potholes. And I almost felt like I wished I hadn't been. But that's not typical of everywhere. And I know in the book you mentioned some of the examples of the towns that have really tried to buck that trend and to keep themselves. And you've mentioned the role of the school. While we were chatting beforehand, you mentioned, was it Bedford that's had such success keeping the school of such a standard that it's uplifted the whole town?
It's an incredible story there at Bedford. I say to my audiences at my talks, if anybody starts running down our country, say go to Bedford. Because in the early 2000s, they tell me that this was a forgotten town. People were leaving in their droves. And then something happened. A few of the local community, a farmer's wife, actually, it was very kind of, I call her the unofficial mayor. She told me how it worked. She said people were looking for this alternative weekend destination out in that beautiful part of the Eastern Cape. So they'd invite them out there, you know, people with money from Port Elizabeth and East London. And they would get them drunk on red wine. And by 4 o'clock, they'd buy any property, no matter how run down it was. Perhaps that's a model we've seen here in the Western Cape, how our weekend destinations are built up. But the point is, there was investment. And the other thing that happened was, everybody has probably heard of the Garden Festival at Bedford. What a wonderful way of making sure a town remains pristine. Mm. But the key, as you said, is education. There's a or Templeton School is the famous school in Bedford, which has probably seen better days, but there's Bedford Country School. Now, this school is run to such a high degree that people are travelling an hour away to bring their kids into this community. Mm. And all of a sudden there, in the Duke of Bedford Hotel, in the middle of the day, you can see young professionals who are invested in this community because the school is good. Therefore, the social scene is good. Therefore, the whole community grows. And as I said, Bedford has turned itself around, and that's a great example of actually a community rising from the ashes, which I believe most of these communities can do. Education is the key, and keeping the young people within that community.
You said most of these communities can do. Were there any that you looked at and felt it's too late?
As the final process in that decay, perhaps, is the church. Now, the only place I saw where the church was run down, perhaps not beyond repair, was a place called Cook House. Now, many of your listeners will know Cook House because of the railway station. And the age of steam and the age of railway perhaps has passed us by. So, therefore, the soul of this town has now moved on. One day, I hoped, you know, trains will go back to Cook House. That was the only place where I felt despondent. You know how positive I am, Pippa, about South Africa. That was the only place where I thought, this is going to take some work. The rest of my journey, as I said, I go to these forgotten little towns, and for me, it's a bit like Mikey's Fontaine in my book. If you visit Mikey's Fontaine, it looks like this quirky little place in the middle of nowhere, and most people drive in and drive out. If you understand the history and the context and some of the famous people that lived in these places, you tend to hang about a little bit longer, and you can see it through a different eye. Mm. And that's how I see my role, going to the lesser known places. And within the book, as you know, there's a map, and I encourage people to take these routes. And everywhere I went, and I've got to say this, it's not just a saying. The Eastern Cape people are the salt of the earth. They really are the friendliest people, amongst the friendliest in this country. And they would welcome you with open arms if they know you're coming to tell their story. Yeah. And that means all communities. I remember going to a place called Oogie, which has got Scottish heritage here. And two guys were actually restoring, local Oogie guys were restoring the local church. And when they realized what I was doing, and we had this conversation, they explained to me that their great-great-grandfather brought actually William Murray, the original Scottish minister, into the community, and they founded this community. So, of course, that kind of communication started. The letters that they wrote to me are in the book. And it made me realize that even, as I say, the lesser-known places have so much value because the people are invested there. Mm. Majority of people cannot leave. They're invested in there.
We're talking to historian and author Dean Allen. You may know him from his previous book, Empire, War and Cricket, which was a bestseller in this country. The new book, plural, because it's a series of three books, Frontier Land, is really a love letter to the Eastern Cape and to the small towns of the Eastern Cape and the amazing people who helped build them and the stories behind them and the people who live there today. We've got a listener's voice note that's come in. Let's take a listen to that.
More than a small piece of my heart belongs to the Wild Coast, and I'd love to know the tales of the Kai River and the wonderful dunes around Morgan Bay and Kai Mouth, and of course Hugga Hugga and Double Mouth and Kumcha, which is the first destination I ever drove to on a rather bumpy road when I was learning to drive way back in the very, very late 1970s. Great show, Pippa. Lots of love from Karen and Glencairn.
Oh, Karen, thank you. And you've made me smile because, every Easter holiday was spent at Kai Mouth and exploring that part of the world. My granddad was a fisherman, Dean, and our holidays got wilder and more remote every single year as he found new rivers and sort of unexplored coves along the Wild Coast. Did you get to see much of the Wild Coast?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. And thank you for that, Karen. And by the way, Hugga Hugga will appear in Volume 3. And this is the challenge for me because people then encourage me to go to new places. I think this journey will go on for the next decade or so, I'm sure. Yes, I did. I went to places like Port St. John and Coffee Bay and those kind of places. The Wild Coast for me is wild. It's that remoteness that you talk about. As beautiful. I said, I've just spent time with the family of Chief McCormack. We literally drove from Butterworth towards the coast, towards a place called Mazeppa Bay. And it was 45 kilometres. It took us nearly 2 hours.
Yeah.
That's how the roads are there. It's the remoteness that protects this area. And for me, it's that's where this the spirit of South Africa still lies. I mean, we live in urban areas, most of us, and we can see how many people from the Eastern Cape live here in the urban areas, very much on top of each other, looking for a living. If you go back to the homelands, you can understand that's where the pride, that's where the real heritage comes from. So it's a real privilege for me to do that. The other thing I should mention as well, I'm engaged not just in a travel book here, but the other big question is the idea of changing names. You mentioned Port Elizabeth, of course,
Quebec,
King Williamstown. I'm sorry, but I can't even pronounce it. Quants. These are African names that have been reintroduced. For me, that's not the problem. For me, the problem is the conversation. I think we need to have conversation. So I've come together with some Khoza colleagues who we're going to have a discussion. We're going to call this program "Our Nation, Our Stories," and we're going to basically come together on stages. And we're going to have a discussion. Perhaps I'm going to present my version of history and my colleague will present another version. And it's all about talking about it. And I love that about the Eastern Cape. We're always open for discussion. There's an open-mindedness there. Mm. And that's something that's cutting edge, because we're having the debate now in a place like Craddock, for example, where they're changing the name again. And I think people just want to own the decision-making process. So I really, really feel that I'm making a contribution in opening up dialogue. And I'd see it as a positive dialogue. We all have our histories, the different culture, and it's a case of understanding each other's viewpoint. And I think the Eastern Cape's a perfect example of how to do that.
Well, Dean, I want to thank you for helping to start and sustain those conversations. You've mentioned Volume 3 is coming. So Volumes 1 and 2 of Frontierland are already available. And is your website the best place to buy them, Dean?
It is indeed. I've just opened up a Shopify online store. Okay. So please go to my website, which is Dean Allen with AllenCO.za, and you can click on the link and you can do it all automatically. We can send the books direct to your home. So they're just available for me at the moment. I've self-published these, which is a different journey from with Empire, which was with obviously Penguin Random House, but I'm really enjoying it. The control we have on the production and the quality of the book, which I'm really pleased with.
Well, I'm really pleased to have had you with us to share some of the stories, and thanks for taking me back on a very nostalgia-laden trip back to my roots and heritage. Dean Allen, the author of Frontierland, Volumes 1 and 2 already available, and Volume 3 to come how soon?
Early in the new year.
So watch this space. Dean, great to have you with us again.
A pleasure. Thank you.